This is the Everyday AI Show, the everyday podcast where we simplify AI and bring its power to your fingertips. Listen daily for practical advice to boost your career, business, and everyday life.
When we think of generative AI, I think a lot of people don't really think of science or biology, right? We just think of being more productive with that spreadsheet or writing a better sales cover letter, right? Or something like that. But that's not what generative AI is capable of. That's not its floor. That's not its ceiling. That's just what a lot of us think. But there's actually ways that some of the world's most advanced bio companies, life science companies, are using generative AI in ways that really have the ability to impact life, to impact science, to impact biology. And that's what we're going to be talking about today on Everyday AI. What's going on, y'all? Thanks for joining me. My name is Jordan Wilson. I'm the host, and Everyday AI, it's for you. It is your guide for everyday people like you and me to learn generative AI, to learn really how it works and how other companies are putting it to work and how it's impacting our daily lives and society as we know it. And today is no different. So normally we go over the AI news. Technically, this is a pre-recorded show, but we're debuting it live. So as always, you can just go to youreverydayai.com and you can sign up for the free daily newsletter where we'll be recapping the news as we always do. If you have comments, go ahead, put them in. I'll be there, answering, and maybe our guests will be able to as well. So don't forget to sign up for that daily newsletter where we will also be recapping today's conversation. All right, enough about that. Let's go ahead and bring on our guest today and talk about how generative AI can actually maybe turn trash into treasures. All right, there we go. So James Daniel is the Vice President of Artificial Intelligence and Computational Biology at LanzaTech. James, thank you so much for joining the Everyday AI Show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Hey, can you tell us a little bit what you do in your role there and what LanzaTech is for those that aren't familiar?
At LanzaTech, we are making technology to help solve climate change. So it is time to move away from this practice of extracting fossil fuels, using them once, and then polluting. We need to keep fossil carbon in the ground. And so what makes this difficult is so many things that we use every day come from fossil carbon. So if you think of tennis shoes, hand sanitizer, laundry detergent, car tires, aviation fuel, what do they all have in common?
Carbon?
Exactly, yeah. They all come from fossil
carbon.
Yeah,
I got one right. All right.
And so this is something that many people don't realize. So all of these types of material goods are made from carbon that's extracted from the ground. And so if we still need to make these things, but we want to stop extracting from the ground, it sounds like an impossible situation. But it's not, because the good news is we have enough carbon above ground to make everything we need. We just need to capture it and recycle it instead of dumping it into the atmosphere. And so at LanzaTech, we are a technology company, and we're developing exactly that. We develop carbon recycling technology. And the way it works is we capture pollution and carbon emissions. We feed them to hungry microbes, and then the microbes eat the emissions and turn them into chemicals. They turn them into building block chemicals that are used to make fuels and everyday products. So you can go and buy things today that are made from carbon that we recycled. Things you can go and buy: perfume from Gucci, athletic clothes and tennis shoes from Adidas, made using recycled carbon.
Wow. So, I mean, let's just skip to the end. So how has generative AI helped in this process, right? And I love the way that you simplified it there for, you know, people like me who aren't, you know, super, super smart into biology. I don't know if I've taken a biology course since I was, you know, like 16 years old. So how are you actually using generative AI to kind of capture this carbon above ground and recycle it and, you know, put it into use into everyday products that we all, you know, use and love? How does generative AI play into that equation?
Yeah, AI is an enabling technology for us. So it enables many of the things we do, and it helps us make our carbon recycling technology more efficient. And so the main area where we apply generative AI is to engineer the biology at the center of our technology. And so I can talk a bit about that if you'd like.
Yeah, let's get into it. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. So before I talk about how we're using AI to engineer biology, I think it makes sense to kind of answer the question, why are we engineering biology? So we build these big refining plants. And so you can think of there as being two components to our technology, to our refining plants. So there's the bioreactor technology, which is like these big tanks, like steel in the ground. And then there's the microbes. So we put the microbes inside the tanks. We install the microbes inside the bioreactors. And then they eat waste gases and they make ethanol and other products. So the tanks and the hardware is fixed, but the microbes can be upgradable. And so we use AI to help us develop new and improved microbes. And so it's kind of like software upgrades. So you get a microbe version 1, microbe version 2, version 3, that's even more efficient at recycling carbon. Or you might put in a microbe that's customized to produce a particular chemical, like isopropanol. And so so we engineer biology to develop this technology. And this was our first application of AI 10 years ago. And we started using it not because it was cool, but because we had this problem, right? We badly needed to solve this problem around engineering biology. And the problem was, what AI offers is it gives us this missing piece of the puzzle in understanding and predicting biology. So we use biology. We love using biology. Biology is incredibly powerful. So you can think of each one of our microbes as being like a little factory with really sophisticated machinery inside it. So, every second, there are millions of chemical reactions that are happening. There are like these little assembly lines that are converting chemicals. And so by harnessing this incredibly powerful biology, we can very efficiently recycle carbon. So biology is sophisticated, it's complex, and it's hard to fully understand how it works. But if we want to engineer biology using genetic engineering to get it to do all these amazing things, we need to be able to predict and understand. Otherwise, you're just stumbling around in the dark. So you're doing tons of trial and error in the lab. You'll try something and it didn't work because maybe you have a knowledge gap, which meant you made a bad prediction. Sometimes you'll try something and it didn't work and you just have no idea why it didn't work. So the key point is it turns out that machine learning is an excellent descriptive language of biology. So you can throw all of this biological data in an AI system. It will learn patterns, it will figure out what's happening, and then it will allow you to make predictions. And so our scientists use this technology across our research stack. And a good example of generative AI is effectively a version of ChatGPT that we use that can speak biology.
Yeah, a lot there. I kind of want to, you know, dissect this, one piece at a time. So, you know, one thing that you talked about, James, is, you know, your company, like a lot of companies have been using AI for a long time, right? Like, you know, companies in biology and life science have been using AI and deep learning, machine learning for, you know, decades. Specifically when it comes to the generative side, right? When we talk about large language models, even for you personally, how has that changed? Not just, you know, the day-to-day work of people working in these fields and related fields, but how does it also change what's possible?
Yeah, so there was a big algorithmic breakthrough in 2017, and that was the development of the Transformer at Google. And so quite a few people know that the Transformer has enabled generative AI technology like large language models and ChatGPT. Not as many people realize that breakthrough has also enabled generative AI for biology. And so ChatGPT is trained mostly on text, right, on the internet, on written language. Our biologists work with similar models that are trained on the language of life itself. So DNA is like a language. It stores biological knowledge. It's a sequence of nucleotides, or like a sequence of letters. And so we use these big GPT-style foundation models in the order of 15 or 20 billion parameters. So these generative pre-trained transformers that are pre-trained on a large number of biological sequences. And so over weeks and over months, these models are pre-training on biological sequences from all sorts of bacteria. And then during that process, the language model is learning something really useful from it all. So it's learning some fundamental rules of biology in the same way that a large language model is learning rules of language as well as some understanding of the world. And so once we've pre-trained one of these models, we can use it for tasks. So like ChatGPT, you could generate text, or we could use it to classify text. Biological language model, you can actually generate the language of life, which you can then engineer into a microbe. And so like I talked about how our microbes are like these little cell factories with all these little assembly lines. So you can imagine that proteins inside the microbes are like machinery on these assembly lines. And so we can generate biological sequences that allow us to create new or better proteins that we put into the microbes that will allow our microbe to make a particular building block chemical, for example. And so we've done this for like isopropanol or isoprene, which are important building block chemicals. And so really, like if I look back over the last 10 years, that has been, I think, the biggest breakthrough. Well, there have been many breakthroughs, but I would say that is the biggest breakthrough that we've seen from that transformer model architecture.
Yeah, and you're right, right? Like I think as soon as the early GPT models, started to become commercially and, publicly available, different sectors, right, started to adopt them for their own uses. I'm curious because you mentioned at LanzaTech that, you almost have this version of ChatGPT internally, right? And we've talked to some companies on the Everyday AI show before that have, kind of built their own model or, fine-tuned their own model. So, I'm curious, how has that process been so far for your company and what has it allowed others to do? Because I'm sure not everyone, is the vice president of AI and computational biology. So there's probably people that have maybe a little bit more of a learning curve when it comes to working with AI. So what has having kind of your own internal model enabled your team to do?
Yeah, so there's two aspects to my role. So I oversee our computational R&D, and so we're applying these techniques across all stages of research and development there. But I'm also responsible for our AI strategy across the business. And so we've been adopting this technology across the business. One part of our broader AI strategy is quite simple. So like many businesses, we're just empowering all of our people with the skills and tools to use large language models because it makes them way more effective. Mm-hmm. And so I think all businesses are going through this right now, or if they're not, they should go through it if they want to stay competitive. And so I think we have many different use cases, but tactically the first and the easiest thing that the team did was just giving all of our people across all functions access to a safe and secure large language model. So like a basic AI assistant to help with writing, summarization, brainstorming. And so we call it LanzaChat. It's like our internal ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini. And one of the interesting things I've found is that I have yet to find a single person in the company who can't get value once they've been properly trained from using this tool. And so based on that, I can confidently say that I think all businesses can make their knowledge workers more productive by doing that. I'm sure you agree with that, Jordan.
Yeah. And, I'm glad you said that because I still think that there's a common misconception out there in the business world that so many employees, aren't going to find value from working with a large language model or, even a domain specific large language model. I was actually having a conversation just last night with someone who is in a similar position. They have a model for their team and they're like, well, the rate of adoption is rather low right now. And we really need to, increase that. So, I'm curious from, someone who's kind of charged with making sure that, a large company such as LanzaTech is using this technology across the board. What are some of your key findings or key learnings that maybe you can share with others who are in a similar position who maybe have their own model, but they're struggling to get more and more people to use it and to find value?
Yeah. So it's never just a technology thing, right? People quite often focus on the technology. But a big part of it is actually the people and the processes as you implement the technology. I mean, like the data is there that shows that this stuff is making people more productive. Stanford just released their 2024 AI Index. And I haven't read the whole thing yet because it's 500 pages. But in part of it, they summarized several studies from 2023 that assessed AI impact on labor. And kind of the consensus there is that it makes workers more productive, leads to higher quality work. But in terms of what we've learned, one of the interesting things is we had early adopters. So we had people who were already quite sophisticated in using these tools in their personal lives. And so we gave them a safe way to use this at work. We gave them something that was grounded on our organizational data. And they did a great job. They created value. But what was interesting for me is the biggest wins that we had were with non-early adopters. So people who had barely even heard of ChatGPT, or maybe they'd tried like the free one, GPT 3.5, which isn't representative of what AI can do today. And so we gave them training. So again, it's not just giving them the technology, it's actually giving training, upskilling. We gave them a little bit of a push, and it was really interesting to see how much more efficient and productive they could be and some of the interesting use cases. So we had many examples. One that I remember vividly is someone was gearing up to do a particularly, well, they described it as a particularly painful and frustrating documentation task. And they had planned to do that in 3 to 4 months. And they did it in 6 days in partnership with a language model.
Wow.
And so we've got some really great stories across the business like that. And so as people are kind of leading the way, they're talking to colleagues, and then we have this transformation process that's happening. And so I think this will happen through all businesses. Mm.
You know, and I think that, begs the question, what happens? What happens when you start to get those kind of efficiency gains across the board, because it is a process, right? So, having your own model is always, much better than using a, public model, right? When you can, use RAG and fine tuning and, have your own domain, knowledge in there. And that helps get those, efficiency gains like you talked about. One thing that I always think about is, the DeepMind, right? And they used a specialized model to I think it was called Fun Search, to kind of solve this unsolvable math problem that the world's smartest mathematicians had been working decades to solve, right? So when you think about your end of the spectrum, when you think about, you're talking about genetic engineering and solving these great biological problems, what do you think language models will help you, whether it's your team or just, your industry? What kind of big problems do you think, they could solve?
Hey, this is Jordan, the host of Everyday AI. I've spent more than 1,000 hours inside ChatGPT, and I'm sharing all of my secrets in our free Prime Prompt Polish ChatGPT course that's only available to loyal listeners like you. Here's what Lindy, who works as an educational consultant, said about the PPP course.
I couldn't figure out why I wasn't getting the results from ChatGPT that I needed and wanted. And after taking the PPP course, I now realized that I was not priming correctly. So I will be heading back into ChatGPT right now to practice my priming, prompting, and polishing.
Everyone's prompting wrong, and the PPP course fixes that. If you want access, go to podppp.com. Again, that's podppp.com. Sign up for the free course and start putting ChatGPT to work for you.
Yeah, so I'm focused quite a lot on technology development. And so it's clear that AI accelerates technology development in general, which is no different to how other general purpose technologies have accelerated technology development. So like electricity or the computer. If I talk to the team and say, hey, for the next 3 weeks, do your work without electricity, it just sounds crazy, right? And so AI will be the same. And I think it makes people more efficient and also more effective. That's exciting, right? Because if AI is a great accelerator of science, then that means we can do more science, we can do better science. We can develop technology more quickly. We need to develop technology more quickly to address many of the challenges that we face. And so I think that's really the outcome, right? It allows people to do more and to be more effective.
Might it be to the point, and again, I'm no expert here. I'm learning along with the rest of our audience, right? So we talked about in the beginning, James, kind of this process of what you're trying to do at LanzaTech, very overly simplified, right? But trying to capture carbon out of existing products, maybe they're before they go to the landfill, versus having to dig into new sources of carbon because the world needs it, right? Might there be a time when we don't need to be digging up new carbon and we'll be able to, everything will kind of be, able to be recycled. Is that a possibility? Walk us through that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's our vision. I mean, I would like to see by, let's say, 2024, where every consumer can make a choice where they can byproducts that have been made from recycled carbon as opposed to carbon that's come out of the ground. And as I said, there is enough carbon above ground to make everything we need. And so through technology, we can drive this change. Mm.
You know, I'm curious, even for yourself, you have a very unique vantage point, you know, working for a large company such as LanzaTech. So you are both looking forward into new innovations and new biological problems that you're trying to solve for the world. But then you're also looking internally, right, at your team and looking for ways to use generative AI to help make the company, you know, more efficient and more impactful in its work. So I'm curious, even for you, what is, whether you want to talk day to day, week to week, month to month, but what is the way that you are excited by the prospects of using generative AI in your own work? Because I think that'll help open up the eyes for a lot of others.
It's a difficult question to answer because you can see how it can touch all aspects of knowledge work, right? Mm-hmm. One thing that's quite exciting for me, so I have a background in science, and I mentioned that AI accelerates the scientific process. And so you think, what is the scientific process? So you do background research, you might design experiments, you'll analyze data, you'll interpret results. And so one thing that I find quite exciting, and one thing that I wish we had, like, 15, 20 years ago, was the ability to automate a lot of this process of background research. And so I'll give an example of what we are doing. So before someone does an experiment, the first thing you want to do is you want to understand what's been done before, right? You want to, and that often requires reading a lot of scientific literature. Inside our company in LanzaTech, we have an internal scientific knowledge base that we've built over 15 years of science knowledge. And it has over 30,000 pages that our experts have written. And so you imagine if someone's about to do some work, they need to find out what's been done before. And that can take a while if you're having to do it yourself. And so I can see examples of where it might have taken 5 days of going back and reading and figuring out what's been done before. We built a large language model on that knowledge base to help our scientists do that. And now you can do that in a day, right? The language model can kind of build those connections, extract the insight. So that type of thing is really exciting for me, just because of its ability to speed up the process of doing science.
Wow. So, you know, I'm curious, what's next? What's next for whether LanzaTech and using AI? Maybe can you talk about any, you know, big projects that are coming down the pipeline, or just for your industry in general, right? And as we look at, you know, kind of the topic of today about how we can, you know, turn trash into treasures, what's next? You know, what should we be looking at, you know, as we hope to, you know, solve this problem or solve it a little bit more with generative AI?
So one interesting area for us in science is using AI to allow us to do really efficient and effective experiments. And so that's an area of development. There's a lot of hype around this idea of an automated scientist. I don't think that's the right framing of the problem. We still have our scientists who are working in partnership with these techniques. But that's quite exciting for me, because if you can really accelerate your ability to do experiments and or really decrease the need for the number of costly and time-consuming experiments, then that, I think that'll really transform things. But from my perspective, and this is actually something that we communicate with the teams during our training when they're using this, I think it's really important when using this technology that the human is always in the driver's seat. And so that's the expectation that we're setting across the board when we're using this technology. So the person is always checking results or is always owning the work output. So instead of saying, oh, the AI did this, that's why there was a mistake, like, we never want to see that. So like, one of our values as a company is we own our decisions. And so that's the way that we're framing the use of these tools. So you own the output, you're always staying in the driver's seat. And I think with that gives us the best of this human AI partnership.
Yeah. I'd really like to use that. If I have a bad show, you know, I'll just use that crutch. The AI made me make this bad show. But I mean, you bring up a good point, right? Because in the end, as generative, you know, even generative AI becomes more and more commonplace in our daily lives, in society, in our daily workflows, you do have to find that right balance. And I love what you said there, James, about, you know, the human is always in the driver's seat, right? Even if it's an autonomous car, you know, with AI, like you still have to put a human somehow, either literally or figuratively, in the driver's seat to make sure that they have accountability for those decisions. So James, we've talked about a lot in today's conversation, but you know, I'm wondering, what is the one main takeaway that you hope that people can take away, you know, specifically as it comes to, you know, kind of the work that you all are doing and how you are using generative AI to get it done?
Yeah, so I personally think we're entering this kind of golden age of technology developments. And from what I see at LensTech, so we, across the world, right, we have incredibly smart scientists and engineers and innovators who are dedicating a lot of effort to solving these big challenges, challenges like climate change. And so I think AI is just really allowing people to massively increase their impact. I mean, we're excited about AI, right? But what I see at the moment really is IA, intelligence amplification. And that's what we're seeing right now. And we're really excited about that.
Love that. I just jotted that down, you know, flip the script. I love that, intelligence amplification. So another gem for us. So thank you so much, James, for joining the Everyday AI Show. We really appreciate your time and your insights.
Thank you for having me, John.
All right. Hey, a lot that we covered in today's episode. Maybe you were driving, maybe you were out walking your dog, or maybe like me, sometimes science and biology can be a little bit confusing. So don't worry, we're going to be recapping everything in today's highlights from the show. So make sure to go to youreverydayai.com, check out the daily newsletter, and also check us out again. We hope to see you back tomorrow and every day for more Everyday AI. Thanks, y'all.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Everyday AI. Thanks for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave us a rating. It helps keep us going. For a little more AI magic, visit youreverydayai.com and sign up to our daily newsletter so you don't get left behind. Go break some barriers, and we'll see you next time.